ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, this is episode 103 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray, recorded on 11th of October, India time. Also from Foursquare Podcasts, Bin John recommends four Hindi love triangles, an evergreen trope that you can watch online. And on WhatsApp Geeks, the podcast for the Desi Techie, we discuss Google's hardware event, which had new Pixels, Nests, smart speakers and more. So head over to Foursquare.net to subscribe and listen. That's the number 4, SPIRE.net. And we've got a super fun episode today with one of our favorite guests. I think last he was on was December 2019. So I can't wait to get started. So let's get our host in and kickstart the show. Hey, Arnab.
Hello. Hello, everyone. It's been a year that we have had the
cookie. December, I looked it up. Yeah. Just close to a year.
Time flies, especially when you're at home. So hello, everyone. And we have the cookie. Chaudhary here with us as a guest. And for those of you who follow the show, Dipto Kirti is one of my favorite authors, and he is an absolute, in Jadavpur terms, he's a senior of mine from Jadavpur University. He's a funda guy on anything related to Bollywood in terms of trivia, in terms of lists. And he has a photographic memory and also a great ability to write. So I'm very proud of him for two reasons. Proud of him because he's a senior from Jadavpur University. In Jadavpur University, we don't have many very famous people actually. So that's one thing. It's good to have a role model in Jadavpur University. And second is that he and I share this love for the 1990s. But that's not what we'll be discussing today. We're discussing something which is slightly more modern than 1990s, which is the 2000s. Because I think we haven't discussed that enough. So while the 1990s have kind of gotten a cult appeal of its right. own with songs like Dard Karara and most 1990s songs nowadays coming back remixed, and 1990s itself being something which people are paying tribute to in a kind of tongue-in-cheek manner mostly. But 2000s hasn't been talked of, and yet 2000s is almost going to be like at least 10 years. It's 10 years have passed since the 2000s ended. And so I think it's time that historians of popular culture like Dipto Kirti and me, we are at a suitably dispassionate point in time, 10 years down the line, where we can look back like historians and try to deconstruct what the 2000s was and why it was, if at all, different from the 1990s. But before we get into that kind of pseudo-intellectual discussion, as two old fans of Kolkata Knight Riders, let's just enjoy this moment at the halfway point of this IPL and talk about Kings XI, Punjab and Chennai Super Kings. So how has IPL been for you, Dipto Kirti?
Thanks for the very kind information, Arnab. I mean, really nice of you to say these things. And I must give a disclaimer that I did not rag him or any such thing that he's saying this. I'm hoping that these are fairly genuine stuff he's saying. So to coming back to this year's IPL, it has been an absolute magical feeling to see other teams doing what we normally see KKR doing, and as you rightly said, that Kings 11, Punjab and CSK are doing it in a almost copybook way. They are like starting off great and then somewhere in the middle they are towards the end. I mean, yesterday it was so brilliant because till about, I think it was some 24 runs of
24 runs of 21 balls at one point.
Right? Exactly. 24 runs of 21
balls. With 8 wickets in hand or something.
At that point in time, yeah. And which is the time when I say that, this, okay, so 1990s cricket has, India has returned, so I should switch off and go off to cry myself to sleep or something. And then, of course, Kings XI did a KKR, and KKR was like not the top of the heap yet, but if this kind of luck continues, I don't know where we will be.
No, see, I think that in this tournament so far, two teams have played way better than the rest. And those are the top two teams, which is Mumbai Indians and Delhi Capitals. So they have looked in a class of their own. After that, there is, I think, a drop in performance. And I think the points table as it exists now is a fair reflection of how the tournament has gone. And 3 and 4, Kolkata and Bangalore. Though I don't think that this is going to be the final four. Somehow, I think there's still going to be a few twists in the tail. But yeah, as Dithukirti said, you know, Kings 11 Punjab reminds me more than Chennai Super Kings. Kings 11 Punjab reminds me of Kolkata Knight Riders in its best seasons, or rather I should say the worst. And of course, the memory is of 2009 when they finished last. And this was exactly what used to happen to them, that they used to get into comfortable positions and then they managed to lose the game. I think no game that KKR fans remember more than that game in which Mashrafi Murtaza, $675,000 buy of KKR, played one game and gave away, I think, 24 runs or something to Rohit Sharma in the last over, where I was 100% positive that this was the first game that they were going to win. And then they didn't even win that. And this was the ultimate champions at that point of time, Deccan Chargers. So this, I don't know what happens to these teams where they're just unable to win a game. And I'm sure, Dithukirti, that you have some comment on a guy called Simran Singh who's playing in a team with Raj in it. But even Rahul, Simran, and Punjab. I mean, I think that's really, as I said, I think that's what happened.
Incidentally, in one WhatsApp group I'm part of where we discuss IPL mainly, he's being called Kajol by everybody. So they're not even calling him Simran. They're calling him Kajol. They think Kajol aaj out ho gaya. Kajol ne nahi kar paaya.
As I said, somebody on Twitter asked me that, I know, what were the thinking sending Simran Singh ahead of Maxwell? And all I could think of was Anil Kumble holding on to Simran Singh and then saying, Ja Simran, jile apne zindagi. And he goes out to bat. Ahead of Maxwell. And jile apne zindagi there. So I think it's, and you know, I think it's sad really, because you know, if I hope people have forgotten the fact that when the season began, I had predicted that Kings 11 Punjab was my dark horse, because I sincerely felt that they had a good team.
And I was just telling someone just the other day, I said, what happened? I mean, Kings 11 was such a good team. I mean, I was also looking forward to them, if not top of the heap, but at least top four looked almost.
No, that's what I thought. Top anyway. Four and KL Rahul, and KL Rahul is KL. I mean, they have the best. You know, if you look at the top five run scorers, they have two people in the top five run scorers. A team like that should not be at the end, right? There's something's really going wrong for that to happen. The distribution of performance is hopelessly lopsided.
Yeah. KL, except for, I mean, they, after they kind of get out there, openers get out, they just, everybody gets out.
It's very, and again, there have been, we can keep discussing Kings 11 Punjab, but what about CSK? What's going on with them?
Well, seriously. CSK, yeah. So, I mean, all I can say is that I don't have any special love for CSK. So, whenever they'll lose, I have a, like, it's, as a friend of mine said that, ki, you know what, that sometimes it is more satisfying to see others lose than to see your team win. So, CSK is firmly in that category for me.
CSK, I think, yeah. So, I was kind of hoping, when the season began, this was the first season that I was actually hoping that CSK do well, because I was feeling bad. You know, these are old people there. You know, you feel like buzurg log. They're also kind of like the last generation that would still kind of like, if we were playing cricket, okay, let's presume, then these people possibly played cricket with us, right? After that, there's no chance. So there seems to be some connection with this generation, and this entire generation, this seems to be the last IPL for them, from Robin Uthappa to Dhoni to obviously to Rehna, to Harbhajan. This is the end. I would believe also for Dinesh Karthik. And who else? And pretty much every Kedar Jadhav, everybody of their generation. This is the, and I think next year they're going to do the auctions all over again. So that gives Chennai Super Kings the opportunity to kind of do a refresh.
Any theories on the mid-season transfers?
I don't think anybody. Like, who will, the only person who I believe would possibly people would hope for would be Ajinkya Rahane. I think Kings 11 Punjab right. might want to get Ajinkya Rahane because he's no chance in hell of getting into the Delhi lineup unless
or even back to Rajasthan too.
Yeah, he could go back to Rajasthan too, but Rajasthan is very top heavy. I don't think that they need somebody at the top. I think everybody there wants to bat at the top. It's only in Kings 11 Punjab where I think they have a genuine case of having someone who can kind of hold the innings. Because what happens is that KL Rahul is being, unfortunately, has become the person who has to play sheet anchor. He has to play both sheet anchor as well as he has to be aggressive. And he's obviously, and he's done a great job. He's still leading the run scorers. But, you know, it's just not working. So I think they need some kind of stability at this point of time. And I think they need somebody who Anil Kumble can trust. I think Anil Kumble just doesn't trust any of these new young boys. I mean, for them, they're like, you know, any name is substitutable for another name. So I think I think he gets up before them, you know, and says, hey, you, who are you? How much have we paid you? 20 lakhs. Okay, today you play. Hello. What are you running about? Today you play. So I think it's kind of become like that because I mean, if you're playing fantasy cricket and if you're selecting Kings 11 Punjab players, you're very, very scared because you select somebody for two games and the second game you find that they're not there for, and nobody knows why. Anyways, so leaving cricket, let's start the main topic for today. So the first question that I had in mind is kind of like, you know, in Litfest, this is the kind of question that they would ask. So this not being a Litfest, but I'll still ask the question, is that when we're talking about the decade from 2000 to 2010, the first question is what in your mind, and, you know, after you've given your answer, I'll say what I feel. What do you think defines a movie of the 2000s versus a movie of the 90s? Let's say there were some movies in 2000s which came out which were very much like movies of the 90s. Like, we wouldn't call them 2000s movies. Like, for instance, Kurukshetra, if you remember.
Yeah.
Or Hum Tumhare Hai, or that movie with Shah Rukh Khan and Salman Khan and Madhuri Dixit, which came out in the 2000s. But it was a very 90s movie. So what do you think defines the 2000s movies as opposed to the 90s movie?
Look, I think, I mean, since we have been talking about this just now before the podcast, I might as well give that example that the 90s movies was that soft tech computer center in your neighborhood, and the 2000 movie was White Hat Junior. So it was like well packaged. It was it had certain very, it looked very cool. It defined, it addressed a very addressable market, so to speak. And it kind of really, 2000 took that from that, starting from that 90s point, it catapulted really well. I mean, my favorite example is that, you know, that 1990s was Ram Gopal Verma. Mm-hmm. Who created this factory, and he made some very masala type of films, some very unusual, quirky, edgy sort of films. He created this whole ecosystem around him in which he gave chance to other youngsters to make a dent and enter filmmaking, etc. And 2000s is Anurag Kashyap. He did a very similar thing. He also created an aura around him. He created an ecosystem of young directors, actors around him. But he did the marketing and the addressing of the market really, really well. So there, which is why that at one point in time that factory kind of collapsed. Anurag Kashyap is going strong and is like finding new markets and doing things very differently.
Okay. So for me, if you ask me this question, I would say that the things that separate the 2000s movie from the 1990s is, first of all, there is a move towards a level of contemporariness. So as an example, I would say Hum Toh. Okay. So it's the same old romance movie, but it's just that the characters are slightly more real than the characters that you'd seen in the 90s, that they were much more contemporary. Of course, if you look at Hum Toh now, you'll find it dated. But there was an attempt, you know, the boy and the girl, they meet while going on a plane to, you know, Netherlands. And then, and again, there's nothing new about Hum Toh. But at least when it released and when I saw it at that point of time, it seemed to be different in tone and tenor from the, you know, typical 90s movies. That was one thing that I felt was different.
Riffing off on that, actually what I feel is that structurally, what changed is that I think the whole multiplex thing opened up in the late 90s. I think 97 was when PVR started. PVR as a multiplex started. And by the early 2000s, the filmmakers realized that you can make a super hit film without going into the smaller towns, the B centers, as they are normally referred in Hindi film industry terms. So therefore, basically, Gadar effectively became the last pan-India hit, as in which was a hit in both small towns as well as, which was a hit only on the basis of small towns. And it did not really need the big cities to pull in the money. After that, as you said, that Hum Toh is a typical multiplex rehash of a age-old Bollywood love story in which boy, girl, first they hate each other, then they sort of meander into falling into love. They sing songs and everything ends happily ever after. They built in a lot of contemporary elements that there was premarital sex was not frowned upon.
Yes, I was going to come to that. And Salaam Namaste also, which was almost like the sequel to that.
Exactly. The singing, one thing that started happening in a big way in 2000s is that the music became background. I mean, it was, yes, of course, people were still doing that 100 backup dancer dance and all of that, but that was becoming less. It was perfectly fine for a hit song to play in the background and neither the hero or the heroine to be singing it, which was like unheard of in the 90s, that if there was a hit song that you had to lip sync to it and sing it. So those kind of things came in. I think that by the mid 2000s, that people just figured out that, hey, boss, it is possible to make a super hit movie just by concentrating on the 4 to 6 major metros and getting into a multiplex audience. And therefore, the movies became a lot more international, a lot more contemporary, a lot more, I would say, modern. I mean, that term, that people like us. So that people like us started getting seen a lot more on the Hindi film screen.
And yes, there were still movies which were being made which catered to an older aesthetic, like you know, the stuff that Karan Johar was still making, which despite looking contemporary, was ultimately you know, very 90s, and not just in its music, but also in its themes.
Absolutely. I mean, I have just a point here that Karan Johar has a very, there is a Karan Johar, the director, and Karan Johar, the director, is Yash Johar's son. He makes that very, people might be wearing all the Pradas and the DKNYs, but their sensibility is very old school Bollywood, that, you know, you love somebody for ages and there is someone, only
loving
one
your
person.
Family.
Loving your family, loving one person from birth to death and all of that. But Karan Johar, the producer, is very contemporary. So if you see that the films that he has done as a producer are a lot more out of the old Bollywood mold and more in the international Hollywood. I mean, of course, he has just bought out rights of Hollywood films and remade them. I mean, which is just an extension of that same personality.
Yes. And even when he made something like Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna, which is about extramarital relationships, even there, the whole pivot of the movie was that these two people were supposed to be meant to be with each other. It wasn't exactly, that they were
exactly.
Very different, and come to that, it's very different from the Imran Hashmi kind of love, which is like, hot lady, I'll start making love. Not that. This is essentially a 90s movie, except that they're kind of been married to different people. And so rather than the parents being the dramatic conflict which they must resolve, it's each other's husbands or wives in this case. That's what made Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna, I think, different. It was kind of a hybrid, I would say, but it was still, at least the way I looked at it, was still very much anchored in the conventions of the 90s, even though it was made, I think, somewhere in the mid-2000s.
Yeah. You are absolutely right. It's like as if Yash Johar is telling him, ki, boss, don't show all this extramarital nonsense. This film will not run in the smaller center. So he's just toning down the edgy part of the content and making the look and feel very modern. So it's like super rich parties in New York and the best that visuals that America has to offer. But under that garb, it's a very traditional 80s, 90s, probably 70s tale.
It's like Amrish Puri, rather than Amrish Puri saying "Jile apni zindagi" to his daughter, here is the husband who's saying "Jile apni zindagi" to his wife. That's the only difference.
Correct.
But ultimately, it's the same thing. It's, you know, people letting go of other people for, you know, for love. And so, you know, of course, it was, you know, it was syrupy and it was fake and it was a terrible movie, at least the way I felt, given the source material that it copied from, which was Closer. I don't know if any of you have seen it, which was about mental cruelty, which, of course, Karan Johar could, of course, wouldn't handle. But it was copied from that in terms of, I would say, some of the look and the feel, and some parts of some sequences were copied from it. But, you know, coming to the second point where I think, and I'm going to, the third point is perhaps the most interesting. But second point was, of course, there was a progression in terms of the amount of realism that was now being allowed on the screen. And I think this was kind of a reflection on the loosening standards of our censor board. I don't know if this was the time that Sharmila Tagore was, I think so, right? This was the time when Sharmila Tagore had taken over the censor board. And this was also the time, I think, when Saif Ali Khan won the National Award for Hum Tum. Of course, you know, a great coincidence, of course, nothing to do with one had nothing to do with the other. But I think this was, you know, you had something like Black Friday coming out, which I don't think would have happened in the 1990s.
Absolutely. I think that whole, there was Black Friday, which I think, which after a lot of hassles came out in the mid-2000, I think 2004 or 2005. And at that point in time, there was also Hazaro Khwaishe Aisi, which had come out, which was, again, I mean, the genre-wise, there was no connection with Black Friday. But I think that there, I mean, what you said, that the realism part was very interestingly portrayed. It looked real. They were real people. There was a real political setup that was being shown, and obviously the heroes and villains were very real people. So yeah, I think that's an absolutely valid point to make.
So I think the language, in terms of the language that was allowed in Hindi movies, was changing, whether it was in Onkara, where, you know, normally you didn't have, at least I've never noticed in the 1990s in a Hindi movie, a character speaking in a dialect in the way that Saif Ali Khan's character, if I remember, spoke in Onkara. So it was not just that realism in terms of the language, but realism also in the way that people spoke. There was more a movement towards making characters feel more alive by anchoring the way they spoke to the socio-cultural milieu that they were part of. I think Ram Gopal Verma started doing this in some of his mafia movies in the 90s, where, you know, Kallu Mama and all these guys, they looked a much more mafia-like than, let's say, Amitabh Bachchan in Dawn, who didn't look like any mafia character ever, right? He looked like this really suave white. No mafia in India looks like that. They looked like Kallu Mama in Satya. So I think that was a move towards, I don't think any criminal in the history of the world looked like Ajit.
Would you also say that it was the death of a dialogue bazi, the Rajkumar type of dialogues, and
that had started dying out, I think, in the 80s. I think 80s was when we had the masala. I think masala is 80s. And with Rajkumar dying out, and I think Mehul Kumar was, I think, the last exponent of dialogue bazi. And he also started producing like cold turkeys in the 2000s. So I think his age was also gone. So Kranti Veer and all of these things were all like, I think, Mehul Kumar.
Actually, I mean, if I just step back to 90s, and we have to step back occasionally to the 90s.
Step back, obviously. That's our sweet spot.
Yeah. So actually, what was I felt is that if you see that Saudagar was one of the, Saudagar would have come around, my sense is around 95-ish, right? Saudagar would be 91, 92.
Yes.
So Saudagar, then if you go till, let's say, Dar, then there was that very stylish, that Kakak Kiran, that was, I would put it in the dialogue bazi zone. And then there was 1995, which was DDLJ. Now, DDLJ had several lines which you remember, repeat, like all these bade bade desho mein choti choti baate and kya simran jile apni zindagi. These are lines which you actually can repeat, and they get a life of its own. I think this kind of tapered off by the late 90s or early 2000s. I mean, if you see that, let's say very memorable film like Lagaan does not have that standalone where Amir Khan will just stand chest out and kind of really throw a dialogue and there will be claps all over the country. That just did not happen, and that kind of tapered
out. Salman Khan did some of them, like Wanted.
Yeah, but they were like very few.
Those are more of South Indian movie remakes.
Incidentally, I read this story in which, a news item which says that actually Prabhas, the made famous by Bahubali and all of that, he's saying that right now the truly pan-India hero is Prabhas and not even Salman Khan. You know, that genre of that clap-inducing, whistle-inducing dialogues, that entry where, you know, everything will stop when the hero makes an entry into the cinema hall, those things were kind of eased out in the 2000s. Incidentally, one of the things I just want to point out, that when you were talking about the dialect, I think only in the 2000s, we started getting names of real towns as the origin of characters. Because prior to that, in the 80s, 90s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, there was the city and then there was the village. And the village had a name like Phulpur, Ramgarh, that kind of a thing, where that typical girls danced on the riverbanks and a nasty Shahri Babu came and spoiled everything that. So you never knew where this place was located. It was in a place.
Sometimes Shakti Kapoor also danced in drag, remember?
Yeah. Yes, that too. Yeah. So whereas from, I think, sometime in the mid-2000s, I think it would be Bunty or Bubbly, which is not a great film, iconic film in that respect. But Bunty or Bubbly was interesting because those people were from Uttar Pradesh and they were like this small town. They were trying to go to Bombay. They had a certain constraint in their small town. They wanted to go beyond that. They had ambition. And after that, the Lucknow, Kanpurs of the world, even let's say Vasepur and Dehradun, all these places as real locations as places where real characters lived started coming out. I think this was a hallmark of the 2000s, where the Bollywood writers or filmmakers became confident enough to show their roots.
Exactly. This is a very good, very, very good point. And perhaps it also coincides with the rise of Dhoni in 2005. So we are seeing the focus. We are seeing the focus of popular attention moving away from, you know, the Gavaskars and, you know, the, you know, or Bangalore, the Rahul Dravids of the world, or the Mumbai to, you know, what used to be called, derisively called, like B grade cities or like B towns.
Absolutely.
And 2000s to and 2020s, you cannot get away from, you know, most movies are nowadays set in rural UP or Bihar with a lot of attention being placed on getting the local thing right. I think that is the quaintness of the whole thing, is getting the local thing right. Like something like Stree, for instance. You wouldn't have something like Stree, even I would say in the 2000s.
Absolutely. Now that you see that Stree is a great example. Bareilly ki Barfi is a great example. Now, Kai Poche was a great example. These places are actually, they're different. So Kai Poche was set in Gujarat and Stree was obviously in Madhya Pradesh, and let's say something like Udaan was set in Jamshedpur. Now, let's say there was nothing rural about Jamshedpur, was just real. I have stayed in Jamshedpur. So it was that whole slightly dour industrial town. It just came across. It was like almost a character which was pushing that boy down, and he was, I mean, getting out of that city was also as important as getting away from the cruel father.
Yes. But you know, some people got it wrong. And have you seen the movie Khushi, by the way, Deepto Kirti?
I've seen parts of it.
So Khushi had Fardeen Khan. And he was a boy in Calcutta. Okay. So there is a song which says, it's 6 a.m. I love you, mom. I don't know if you have heard this song or heard of it. But Sonu Nigam sings this song. And in the middle, he starts singing in Bengali in order to sound authentic. And he says, Mishti Dhoi. Dhoi.
No, I have thankfully avoided this movie. I remembered this as one of Kareena's early films, but no, I have not watched Mishti Dhoi.
Yes, you must see it. I mean, it is absolutely the most inauthentic Calcutta movie that you can ever see. You know, where Fardeen Khan plays a Bengali guy who starts off, you know, his character is introduced saying, it's 6 a.m. I love you, mom. I'll have some cornflakes. Mujhe milega dam. And then at sometimes later it says,
WTF.
I'll have a shower and a shave. Listen to music. It's got to be rave. Put on my jeans and provoke shirt. So this is supposed to be what a Bengali is, of course. And then it, you know, transitions to Mishti Dhai. Anyways, digressing. Now the third thing which I believe the 2000s was very different from 90s was in sex. So in the 70s, for instance, sex happened when people fell into a cold pond and the hero had to save the heroine by his body warmth, let's just say. I mean, or
accidental drinking. You had
So sex happened as premarital sex or post-marital, whatever, you know, sex basically happened as it was not supposed to happen, but virtuous people engaged in it when there were much bigger things at stake. Let's just put it like that, like life and death. But then over in the 90s, we kind of came to a very sexless place where people in general, like if you look at all the romances, I can't think of one in which the heroine gets pregnant, for instance, which was a fairly standard a trope in this, in if you look at Rajesh Khanna's, you know, body of work, you know. But in the 90s, somehow I felt, and maybe I'm missing something, in 90s something, you know, that never became, even think of Hum Dil De Chuke Sanam, which, you know, the heroine gets married, but you know, it's very obvious that they're not consummating the marriage, right? So she's effectively not married. So there was something in the 90s, at least, it looked, I mean, India wasn't that in the 90s. I mean, I was, you know, in the 20s, in the 90s, and no, that didn't accurately reflect what was going on in the streets or in the sheets, let's just say. But in the 2000s, there was like this radical shift, perhaps because of the loosening of control of the censor board and the arrival of one Mr. Imran Hashmi, who produced this singular body of work. And I use the word body in every sense of the term, where he basically, you know, fornicates with anything that moves. And sometimes in some movies, they're dead and he's fornicating with the ghost also. So it didn't matter if it was alive, dead, in this world or another world. If Imran Hashmi was there, he's fornicating. So this was, I think, one of the biggest. And again, I think in the 2010s, his following also kind of dwindled because it kind of lost its shock factor. But at that point of time, it was a huge, huge deal, especially with Mallika Sharawat. And, you know, what was that movie? I've forgotten with it.
Murder.
No, murder. Not murder. The one with the inordinate number of kisses. What is that, murder?
Oh, no. That was that, college politics thing. Forgot the name.
Anyway, so what is your opinion on this, Deepta Kirti? Or will you claim that you've never heard of Imran Hashmi?
No. Imran Hashmi, how can you not hear of him? He's been around for... he was amazing in Shanghai. No, so honestly speaking, you are right. What happened is that it was a very slow coming down of the walls, so to speak, where from that typically cliched, that flowers touching and rainy nights and drunken parties leading to sex. I think sex became, like you were saying a little while earlier, that it was very real and everything became a lot more contemporary, closer to us. So therefore, it became fine to show a hero-heroine in a live-in relationship, having sex, even without showing explicitly like Imran Hashmi. It was just there, you know, and people did not, normally what happened is that if a heroine had premarital sex, or either the heroine or the hero died, it was like a punishable by death kind of an offense.
Or something terrible like Kya Kehna would happen.
Yeah. Oh God. Yes. that's like a fate worse than death kind of a thing. So sex was like something terrible. Only the bad guys did it kind of a thing. Yes. And you have to be really careful of it. That definitely came off. So I think it came along with the loosening of the dialogue related, where much more explicit dialogues came in. It was, I think, that also slowly coming in. I'm just trying to remember that, how did it kind of become...
like that Jism Ki Bhook dialogue in Jism. I can't imagine...
When did Prem Agan come out?
That was in the 90s.
Came out in the 90s, where you had to show, you basically had to show, you know, sex through Zumba. Remember Exercise, that song?
Yes, of course.
Very sexual song, except it's presented as a Zumba song.
By the way, I just realized that today is the Big B's birthday. So since Mr. Bachchan would be trending, let me ask you a clickbaity question to both of you. And so I wanted to ask him, how do you map his ability to jump onto the 2000 cinema, considering he didn't exactly have a great 80s and 90s rather?
I think he somehow, after probably the success of KBC and all of that, 2000s was the first decade where he threw his image to the winds and acted in a lot of films which were very off the beaten path for him. So, he did some, his traditionally that angry role like a Sarkar, Khaki, that kind of stuff also did. But if you look at his role in Kabhi Alvida Na Kehna, where he played a sort of septuagenarian, sexy Sam and all of that, it was like, ki saying ki chalo masti karte hai, kind of. I thought...
No, Baba, he did too much masti. There was, you know, that Tani Mukherjee in Black.
You have to also remember that he did Ram Gopal Varma Ki Aag, in which he fulfilled a 30-year-old wish of his own wish to have played Gabbar, and kind of gave us probably the most searingly unforgettable film of his
career. But of course, speaking of Ram Gopal Varma, I mean, one of my favorite performances in 2000s of his was Nishabd. That was around, I think, 2008 or something.
Yes. So he did a lot of these films, like Nishabd, where, let's say, as a much married 50, 60-year-old falling in love with a 19-year-old. There was a bit of a dichotomy that he was lusting after a 19-year-old girl, but there was no sex. So that was probably one of the aberrations from what Arnab and I were just saying 5 minutes back.
No, but that was, I guess that, you know, ultimately, even though it was 2000s, I mean, it was still Amitabh Bachchan. So there were like lines that could not be crossed. For me, at least, Amitabh Bachchan, I believe the 2000s marked a revival in his fortunes with Mohabbatein, which came out in the year 2000, where he finally decided, and this is again, this is a Dhoni point in career, that, you know, people realize that they need to move on. And you would be surprised that, you know, such super successful people like a Dhoni or an Amitabh Bachchan or a Sachin Tendulkar, or in this case now Shah Rukh Khan and Salman Khan and Amir Khan, are unable to understand that there is a point in time where they have to move on beyond essentially leading man roles. And they can highlight movies, but they have to highlight these movies as characters rather than as the, you know, the typical hero. And what was the last Shah Rukh Khan release? It was Zero, right? And it was very obvious that this, I believe that Zero would have worked. Of course, it would have worked with the totally different second half, but might have worked much better if this was a younger Shah Rukh Khan. He just reached that age where he has to, and I think it's very difficult. It's not that he doesn't himself understand, these people are smart people, but it's just that the market forces, I mean, these people are no longer actors. These people are industries in themselves. And the market forces that make them, that compel them, that, you know, one more, that at some point of time, unless you reach the stage at which Amitabh Bachchan reportedly was when he was offered Mohabbatein, where, you know, ABCL had failed and he was, you know, it was unlike a state that any of the Khans, for instance, find themselves in. They're all, you know, comfortably, they're financially, they're already comfortable, so they can continue to kind of sail on what they have been doing. But Amitabh Bachchan wasn't at that stage where, I guess that was what the story was. I don't know how true it was that he approached Yash Chopra for some help. And Yash Chopra said, I'm not going to give you help, I'm going to give you a role. And that's how he did Mohabbatein, which was again a very different role from what he had done, where the focus was there were so many love stories in Mohabbatein, I think 7, but none of them involved Amitabh Bachchan. So this was very, very different from what he had ever done, and it was a very big success. And another thing which again the Tukiti said was that he was one of the first stars to make the transition to television. For many years, television had been seen to be like the place where careers go to die, or where, you know, young actors make their mark, like a Shah Rukh Khan. But then they transition full-fledgedly to the big screen. So it took, I'm pretty sure that this was not a decision which came easy, and this was something which was forced by his situation, that going to KBC and kind of a whole new generation rediscovering Amitabh Bachchan, because Amitabh Bachchan's image so far had always been of this super aloof, you know, super, super aloof person who hardly gave interviews to the media. I mean, he had banned the media for many years. And even when his political career was very checkered and controversial, it was a disaster. And he's himself many times said that it was a disaster in every sense of the word. So a new generation of people discovered Amitabh Bachchan as this really likable, personable, you know, kind of, you know, friendly uncle on television who's helping people become rich. And it was a very, very different from the Main Aaj Bhi Phenki Hue Paise, you know, that kind of angry young man. This was a kind old man. And Amitabh Bachchan was very successful in kind of, and you know, he was not just KBC, but you know, he was ubiquitous in advertisements. And I think he kind of led the way for a successful transition from a leading man, from the biggest hero that, you know, still the biggest hero the Hindi movie industry has ever seen, to somebody who's as successful, but, you know, doesn't need to be in the spotlight always. And I think there's a huge lesson there for the next generation of superheroes who have also, I believe, reached that sell-by date of when they have to step away from the spotlight. Only exception is Akshay Kumar, who can still continue to act, you know, play a teenager. But that's because he's from Canada, he's not from India. All right. And so the last thing that I wanted to talk about, which was about what defined 2000s, was the phenomenon called Himesh Reshmiya. So I don't think the Hindi movie industry had ever seen something like Himesh Reshmiya before. That this guy who was, you know, a very kind of a, you know, second string music director in the Salman Khan camp, suddenly, you know, nobody knows how exactly. It wasn't as if social media was, you know, huge in those days. But suddenly he became like what I would possibly say was the greatest guerrilla PR campaign ever, to become, like, for a few years at least, the most talked about star in India. Or rather, if it was Himesh Reshmiya, he would say Ishtar. So what is your opinion on Himesh Reshmiya, the phenomenon of Himesh Reshmiya, and the fact that we don't even know where he is now?
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you.
Actually, it was like the Paul Valsati of the 2000s. So
actually, Himesh Reshmiya started off as a composer of television shows. I don't know if you guys remember, in the late 90s, many of the ZTV shows, those super popular daily soaps kind of thing, used to have tracks, the title tracks or the whatever little music was there in those shows used to be composed by him. That's the first time I remember seeing his name. And then he did what you said, that he did some smaller Salman Khan films like I think Hello Brother and all of that. And then sometime, I think, I'm trying to remember, was it Aashiq Banaya Aapne, which was his first ever hit, which would have come sometime in the mid 2004.
Wasn't Bandhan a hit?
I would say that there was a time he did Bandhan, I cannot recall. Maybe it was, so Bandhan, Hello Brother, Tere Naam, these were all that. There was a early 2000 Salman Khan, when Salman Khan was not the 300 crore hit machine. Himesh Reshmiya was his regular composer. So yes, Bandhan might also be around that, in his thing. And then that Aashiq Banaya Apne was, I think...
By the way, Deepthukitti, are you aware there's a Bengali copy of Bandhan?
No, I don't. And I will try my best to avoid it now that you have mentioned it.
All right.
So then came his hits and the parodies, and the parodies fueled his hits even further. So that Tera 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 Sarur and Jhalak Dikla Ja, and which became the typical, that slightly nasal
Dil Chinatown mein.
Very like, repetitive super hits. Incidentally, I must tell you, I mean, I always kind of being the typical snobbish urban person that I am, I used to sneer at Himesh Reshmiya. And then I used to travel a lot to the smaller towns. I mean, not smaller towns, like the places like Lucknow, Kanpur of the world, not metros in that sense of the word. I actually saw lots of people who were dressed like Himesh Reshmiya. So he was that big a star in the outside of the metro. So the people used to actually wear those caps slightly pulled down. In peak UP summer, they would be wearing a flowing, that jacket kind of a thing, tight dark jeans, fitted t-shirts and all of that. So people were, he was a big enough star, music star, to have become a sort of somebody who's even whose dress, whose fashion sense people were copying. So Himesh Reshammiya was, huge is probably an understatement.
Then what happened to him?
I think then he acted. That's what happened to him. When people saw his, I think he did a film
Aapka Saroor.
Aapka Saroor, of course, which was just, there were more parodies of that film than more people viewed the parody than the actual film.
And then there was, then there was Kurz.
Kurz, the movie, Kurz. The real love story.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yes. And then he went into TV. Then he went into the Saregama Pa and all of those things. And wasn't he the one who used to say, Jai Mata Di, let's rock?
Yes, Jai Mata Di, let's rock. He was, so I think, I thought that he was building himself up pretty well. And I think there is a good, case study, MBA case study as to what exactly went wrong with him. Because I think he had put together, of course, we might laugh at Aapka Saroor, but his music was working very well.
It was working amazingly well.
Because over here, Himesh Reshammiya, if you go to any Patel Brothers, you are shopping over here, you would have definitely heard Himesh Reshammiya playing. So there were only two things. If you go to an Indian restaurant in India, in the US, it's always Taal Se Taal Mila. Always. There's two things which you can be assured of. Bad biryani and Taal Se Taal Mila. and if you go to any Patel Brothers, it's always Himesh Reshammiya that's playing.
Actually, I had read one interview of his, of course, in where else but in a salon, where he said that I think he did the Bhagyashree Gambit. He said that for the next few years he would only act in movies which would have him as a hero, and vice versa.
Oh shit.
I recall having heard that. Yeah, that might have screwed him up, a bit. But I used to really enjoy Himesh Reshammiya. I used to enjoy because he brought this. I haven't seen anybody like him after 2000s, because I remember he said that he used to be fairly overweight, and then he lost all this weight and he became like this very chiseled guy. And I think I'd read in an interview that he was saying that, it happened because, he used to just eat tandoori chicken. That's all. It was basically, I'm guessing a modified keto diet that he was on.
Right.
And that's not the great image thing. Of course, you hate tandoori chicken, so what? But then he said that that is why he composed that song, Ta-ta-ta-ta Tandoori Nights. Yes, I'm not kidding. That's why he made it. This was a dedication to his weight loss journey. You wouldn't know that. This is like what you would actually put on the DVD extras for Kurz. What is this song? This is like trivia question. This is actually, his own homage to Tandoori and its ability for him to lose weight. And, if you listen to Tandoori Nights, you will not understand whether it's a song about love or it's a song about actually eating tandoori and then having indigestion through the night. Listen to it.
He was quite self-aware in some of the interviews. I think, I don't know if it was in the Karan Johar thing, where he also said, the reason he was putting on a cap was because he had his hair weaved at that time. And he seemed to be quite aware of, what his pros and cons are and how people perceive him. So I kind of, that interview at least, I used to think of him as a joke, but that interview made me think that, okay, this guy is grounded. He knows what he is doing, but maybe somewhere things went wrong.
Yeah. So one of the things I was thinking, connecting, this whole Imran Hashmi and the small town phenomena and Himesh Reshammiya were all probably connected in some way or the other. And in the middle part of, let's say, from something like 2003 to 2008, they were, all of them kind of rose and became a humongous phenomenon in Hindi films. Unfortunately, only the small town phenomena is still there. Everything else seems to have, the other two seems to have dropped out.
Okay, so now to end, your favorite, your best and worst movies for the 2000s.
Okay, best movies. My favorite movies of the 2000s. I think I'll start with the end. 2009 had Luck by Chance, which is one of my favorite Hindi movies of the 2000s decade. It was, it is what you, many of the things that we have been discussing as in a very real, a very real setup, not the filmy film setup, but the real film industry setup, hero and heroine who were living together. The sex was almost like a subtext in their relationship, which had other elements. And one of the most important thing, interesting things that I liked is that the hero is actually not a hero. He's not even an anti-hero. He has distinct villainous tendencies. He is he cheats people. He cheats on people. He is ruthless. He just wants to. He's ambitious and all of that. So I thought it was an amazingly real portrayal of the film industry. And yes, of course, it presents a beautiful homage to the 80s, 90s Bollywood as well.
Right. What else?
What else? I might as well complete the entire Akhtar family and name Dil Chahta Hai, which is on the other end of the 2000s. Which I really like. Again, very real people like us saying silly jokes, friends not dying for each other, making fun of each other, pulling legs and going to Goa, though in Merc convertible. Yes. But barring that Merc convertible, everything else seemed very real.
In fact, in Dil Chahta was the first time I saw rich families shown normally, instead of having fountains in their houses and, Greek statues and stuff.
And also not being evil. People were regular people. They were nice people. They had their own quirks and idiosyncrasies. They did silly things. They did some nice things and all of that. Unless
I think this is a very significant thing what Diptokirti is saying, and if you kind of overlay it with India's history, this was the time when liberalization had kind of, it's been like 10 years,
right?
That liberalization. So when liberalization began, we were a socialist country where any kind of display of wealth was immediately was a moral failing, and you had to live like the way Indira Gandhi wanted you to live, which is simple clothes and have dal chawal, and anybody who had something a little bit more ostentatious was automatically a smuggler. And I'm not just saying this as even somebody like Satyajit Ray in one of his last movies, if you recall Diptokirti, the fact that the person is wearing a Rolex watch, if you remember, was the proof positive that he had kalo taka, which is black money, which is, of course, at that point of time, which was, essentially about the same as being a serial killer. And so that attitude that, in which, having a Rolex watch was a sign that you support genocide. We had changed from that. And now it was considered perfectly okay for likable people to go to Goa in a convertible.
Yes, absolutely.
Otherwise, before that, the only people who drove convertible were Shakti Kapoor, right? If you remember. So good heroes didn't drive convertibles.
Good heroes drove in Jeeps, while the heroine drove next to him in a... Yes. So the Jeep,
at least one of them was going on public transport.
Yeah, yeah.
but in the 2000s, that was no longer the case. This was a very good point. And what else?
About
the 2000s? And of course, feel free to say about the terrible things, because ultimately that's what people like to hear.
No, I'll still remain with the ones I liked. I really liked sometime in 2006 or 7, which was Johnny Gaddar. Oh, again, yes. a very morally ambiguous hero.
Great movie.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened in the 1990s was that when a hero played a negative character, it was a big deal. Like when Shah Rukh Khan played the characters in Bazigar, and we have discussed this so many times, Bazigar, Dar, etc. Mm-hmm. It was like a tsunami kind of a thing, that what the hell has he done kind of a feeling. Whereas when, I mean, this was, I think, Neil Nitin Mukesh's debut film as well. And he was perfectly okay with playing a almost casual villain. I mean, he was just another guy trying to get rich through slightly dubious, in his thing, not even slightly dubious means in his
eyes. So again, that's an important point. And Deepthu Kirti and I, in our previous podcast, discussed this, that with Shah Rukh Khan, the main thing was, even when he was a villain, he was a heroic villain. Mm. So his, none of his villains, except perhaps, that Kundan Shah movie, what was that?
Kabhi Haan Kabhi Na,
where he was kind of an unlikable person. That was, I think, that was the actually the different movie that he did, because he played somebody who was kind of unlikable. Heroes never play unlikable characters. So if you watch Dirt, who remembers Sunny Deol? That's why Sunny Deol never worked with Yash Chopra after that, because he was smart enough to realize that even though he was the hero, he actually wasn't. He was a side character in that movie. And, you know, the same thing happened with Bazigar. That none of these heroes in the 90s, even when they played a negative character, could actually play somebody who you wouldn't like. But in Johnny Gattar, Neil Nitin Mukesh did play a person who was kind of unlikable in terms of, you know, what he does to Dharmendra and everything. You know,
he's a guy who's
trying to save him, actually, trying to do good to him. And, you know,
yeah, exactly. It like slowly builds up. He starts off as a hero, and then slowly there is a descent, and he either does not want to stop it or he cannot control it. And you say that, I mean, and he becomes, and by the end of the film, he is like almost a full-fledged villain.
Yes. And the thing about him, and this was again, is that previously in old world Hindi movies, villains, at least if they were being played by the hero, there was always some kind of like VR kind of justification. That
yes,
this guy isn't actually a villain, and he has a very strong moral core, but society has made him like this because they have done terrible things to him. In this case, and this actually, I think, the first movie where I think this kind of came to focus was Satya, where the hero, you didn't even know why he was like that. He had no backstory, exactly. Nothing, just comes in, does something, dies. Again, with Johnny Gattar, the fact is this character is actually, you know, he's a very unique character in the sense he's not immoral. He's just amoral. He has no notion of morality. He's a person who has absolutely no scruples. It's not that he does bad things because he's a kind. No, he's not that guy either. He just does things which are beneficial to him. And they're not, he doesn't have an evil conspiracy. He's, in some of the cases, he's just doing that to survive. But in order to survive, he is absolutely fine with taking choices which have no morality in them. And that was what was unique. Besides, of course, the exquisite plotting and the script and the editing and virtually everything about that movie. I mean, when the movie finished, my jaw literally fell to the floor. I mean, figuratively fell to the floor. That, wow, I have never seen anything in Hindi movies like this in terms of how it, like from start to finish, not even one loose minute. Everything was necessary in that movie. There's nothing, not one little bit of flab. It's a great movie. I wish Sriram Raghavan had made movies even close to what he had done with Johnny Gattar. What else? And I'm seeing that you haven't yet mentioned Jaani Dushman Hai Kano Ki Kahani, but go on.
I was about to mention, like, of the films that kind of, since you said jaw fell to the floor, I was thinking of bringing up Main Prem Ki Deewani Hoon, which is the example of superstar director of the 1990s losing his mojo.
No. What happened with Main Prem Ki Deewani Hoon was it was an engineering attempt by Suraj Barjatya to create like a hybrid car. So before that, he was very comfortable making gas machines, which were gas guzzling, you know, full of ghee and lassi and, you know, desi goodness. Of course, he couldn't go and become electric. He just didn't have that technology. So he tried to make a hybrid. So there was all that desi thing going on, but there was also some of the more other, you know, naughty bits which was going on side by side. And there was also a digital parrot. Somebody had told him that, you know, in order to get with the times, you need to have some special effects. Now, I'm pretty sure that Hum Aapke Hain Kaun would have been terrible with special effects. But, you know, obviously, they didn't think so. So Prem Prem Ki Diwani Hoon had pretty much the worst of everything. It was a terribly designed hybrid car, which, you know, failed in every respect.
Yeah.
And so, what else? Is there anything else that you would want to mention in the same breath? I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Khosla Ka Ghosla, for instance.
Oh yes, I mean I was thinking that in the 2000s that the whole Dibakar Banerjee, that Khosla Ka Ghosla, Oye Lucky Lucky Oye, and Love Sex or Dhoka were three amazing films which came one after the other, and it was again very real, very different, but retaining some amount of that whole, you know, Khosla Ka Ghosla was great fun as well, not so much Love, Sex or Dhoka. But yeah, so I think Dibakar Banerjee's part, I mean, then of course he stopped making films altogether, what it seems like.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Now he just makes these anthology things with Karan Johar in Netflix. That's what he does, right?
Yeah, and his exactly. There was, I mean, of course, if we are talking about, films which again jaw-dropping films, then we also have to mention the Drona, where Abhishek Bachchan's jaws literally like jiggled when he was doing those humongous jumps and all of that. Again, I mean, special effects gone wrong. I think 2000s, one thing that 2000s did really badly was the special effects part. I mean, they were trying to go the Hollywood route, but they still did not have the technology wherewithal.
They were still using old Pentium 486s.
Yeah, so therefore, you had, they were copying Matrix in a very cheap
yes,
way.
Of course.
Jani Dikshan, Jani Dushman.
Jani Dushman, Jani Dushman being the...
Yeah, so... I mean,
but again, if you see like the 3 hours of Jani Dushman, and the only thing that, you know, strikes is the Matrix-inspired graphics, then there's a bridge that I need to sell you. That's the only thing found strange about the movie. It has to be possibly the most bizarre movie that I've ever seen.
The MSG movies.
What?
The MSG movies.
MSG movies...
Those are devotional videos.
MSG movies are personality cult. They're, you know, the fact is nothing in MSG movies catches me of surprise. I mean, once you know the general, like who MSG is, and if you have seen his music videos, you know what you're going to get in. But when I saw Anokhi, you know, Jani Dushman Ek Anokhi Kahani, this was like watching 10 Nolan movies in parallel. I had freaking no clue what was going on. It wasn't that I didn't understand the movie, but nobody knew what the next thing would be. It was that bizarre. And I would say, I mean, if I would say, you know, if there's one movie that I would recommend of 2000s, then I would definitely recommend, you know, Jani Dushman Ek Anokhi Kahani. Because I don't think there's a movie which has been made like that ever since or even before that. And of course, there are very good movies. And I think, you know, Dipto Kirti mentioned a few of them. I mean, I think you didn't mention Lagan, which, of course, I liked a lot.
Yeah, of course. Lagan was...
I liked Lagan a lot. I liked Dave D a lot. I felt it was the second best Anurag Kashyap movie after Gangs of Wasseypur, I would say. But I felt that, you know, it was visually stunning. Really, really liked it. I liked the first Munna Bhai movie a lot, even though it was, you know, yes, inspired by Patch Adams. But I felt that it was in a way classic Bollywood in that it was good, clean fun.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone can go and watch Munna Bhai and say, you know what, this was a disappointing movie.
Exactly. It
was almost like everybody likes Munna Bhai.
Let me ask a question to both of you, if you don't mind. When 2000s, especially the mid 2000s, was when the internet was, getting more and more popular, right? So, and this also led to copycats being called out. I mean, as much as I know your the love of 90s movies to both of you, you have to accept that most of the music was copied, shamelessly ripped off. So, did this also help? Because copycats were being openly called out in 2000s. Did that also force the movie industry to be more original, or at least lift from sources which were tougher to track?
I think they started paying for the rights in the 2000s. Because more important than the audience finding out, I think the original composers were finding out.
Yes.
So, which is why you had, I think, in Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gum, there was a scene in which this...
Pretty Woman was licensed.
That was in Kal Ho Na Ho. So in
Kalhona, Kabhi Pretty Khushi was licensed.
Yes. In Kabhi Khushi Gum, they made a cover version of It's Raining Men and got in a bit of a jam because they got sued. And then in Kal Ho Na Ho, they actually licensed Pretty Woman and made a whatever version of it. So I don't think the Indian audience really cares. If the song is good, India was listening to 3 Macarena versions, 2 by Anu Malik and 1 by that original guy simultaneously, and nobody ever had any problem saying that no, I will not listen to this song because it's
copied. What movies were they? One was Dhal.
Ozar
was one was Dhal, I think.
Wow. And you guys knew this without Googling, just off the top of your head?
Ozar, I remember. So he remembered Dhal, I remembered Ozar. So yeah, between the two of us, we did this.
Man, oh man. Okay.
So I think that more than music, I mean, it was the movies which were, I think, still being lifted. And they still are lifted, as a matter of fact. But as Deepthakirti says, now, what used to happen was that in the 90s, we had no idea where the source was lifted from because of the, the only way you could, would be to play it on a VCR. That was the only way we were exposed. Then by 2000s, you had DVDs. And by 2010s, we had, full Netflix streaming libraries. So now everybody knows if you are copying from some, little known or, Danish movie, from somewhere, everybody knows, and they know, as Tukiti said, they know very well, and they know the amount. And in the 90s, whether it was true or not, but at least the Western world had an idea that we were a poor country, we didn't have much money, so why even bother to go after? But by that time, at least people had found out that Bollywood makes a shitload of money, so there was a definite amount of money to be had if you actually take them to court for copyright infringement. And that's why we have so many nowadays. And that's a good trend, I would say. It's a terrible trend for me as somebody who produces content that even now that Indian movie makers and, they want to essentially go for things that have worked somewhere else. Like why would somebody want to do, bank heist, right? That's, Casa del Papa. Why would anybody want to remake that in Hindi when people can watch it on Netflix? I mean, I just don't understand. But whatever it is, but at least nowadays they have to, go to the source and get a license. Otherwise they will be in, deep, deep shit.
Yeah.
I remember there was one thing that I should say that, I had once, so among all the, I don't have many friends like in Bollywood, but there was only one person that I had who was a friend, but who was on an account where you wouldn't know who that person actually was. So, but very, very famous person. So once I had written, this status update, bemoaning, Bollywood's originality. And that person had then written a comment that, I don't see what the problem here is. This is an Indianization of that. And of course, a part of me should have just let it lie, but I decided to reply to that comment. But I think this kind of was a mentality that people in those days had, that it was not a copy if you Indianized it. like Atish was an Indianization of you know, there, you know, that I've forgotten what the name of the original movie is. It's a Hong Kong movie. So as long as it was being sufficiently Indianized, then it was okay, that there was nothing morally wrong in taking somebody else's work and, you know, making another derivative work without even acknowledging the source. I think that has changed nowadays for the better, obviously. Any other movies that you would want to recommend for people, like some movie that people don't know about, that you feel, or rather people know about, but you feel kind of passed under the radar?
I think, again, in that whole real movie zone, people like us zone, I thought films like Jhankar Beats was, I at that point in time when it released in, I think, early 2000, it was created a stir. It had a cult following.
I liked Kamine a lot.
Yeah, Kamine was great. Then there was, again, a very under the radar film called Loins of Punjab Presents.
Oh, yes.
These are the two, three films that have come. I mean, again, very low budget, very quirky humor, that kind of stuff. I thought they were, again, I mean, they started coming in because of the that whole multiplexes, the smaller,
the Nagesh Kukunur type movies.
Nagesh Kukunur started in the end 90s, but he had a series of fairly decent films in the 2000s, which were.
Let me ask you a very interesting question. Tell me a movie that you liked but nobody else liked, and you felt terrible for having liked it.
I didn't feel terrible. I mean, I thought when I first watched, actually, it was not 2000s. When I first watched Andaz Apna Apna, I could not find anybody who liked it.
Okay.
So,
you were mixing with the wrong people then. That's all I would say.
Probably. This is like culturally conscious Calcutta, right? So, I remember I laughed so hard during Andaz Apna Apna when I was coming out. The friend whom I'd gone with, he asked me that, were you really laughing? I mean, finding it funny, or were you trolling everybody else? So, because he could not believe that, why would I laugh so much during the movie? So, and that was the main thing till I found other like-minded people.
See, the thing with Andaz Apna Apna is that it's a very acquired taste. It's not that the movie per se, it's funny, unless you realize that they're actually spoofing other movies where they're saying that, you know, Ye Sarak Tera Baap Ka, something that, you know, unless you really understand why, you know, they're saying Tera Baap to Salman Khan, and, you know, you have to understand these things, or, you know, Aila Juhi Chawla. Unless you get that, you're not going to understand the movie.
You are right. Actually, there is no way of explaining, let's say, Aila Juhi Chawla, and that Govinda comes and does a 2-minute cameo, and somebody says, Govinda Chipakke. That whole, that is such a comment on 90s cinema. I mean, you know, whether you like 90s cinema, whether you don't like 90s cinema, that is what 90s was all about. That Govinda going from one set to another, Juhi Chawla getting, talking about her husband to her co-star. And these were all very quaint Bollywood concepts, which actually make the film better, because these are the things which really make Andaz Apna Apna cut above the rest. I mean, otherwise, yeah, there are lots of comedies, you can have fun and all of that. But I think they got that tune very correctly.
Yes. And one of the tropes of Hindi movies has always been the Juruwa brother. And there is like this one little thing which distinguishes them, that Mark Idhar Hai thing. So, you know, you understand that they're basically making fun of it. And I think the movie that I find it closest to thematically is the Scream movie. I don't know if any of you have seen Scream. So Scream is this slasher movie which was made in the 90s. And the great thing about Scream is that it's a slasher movie along with a spoof of a slasher movie together.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the greatness.
If you, acknowledge you watch
it as a slasher movie, and you will enjoy it even more if you realize that it's actually a spoof of a slasher movie. So on that note, the one movie that I think that people didn't see at all, and which I absolutely loved of the 2000, was a movie called Shabd, which again was terribly marketed as like a sleaze movie. It was hardly that. But in terms of, I just felt in terms of the story, in terms of the presentation, it was like, when I saw that movie, I felt, wow, where did they copy this from? Was the first question that I had. And I don't think they copied it from anywhere. Or at least I haven't found out. But I think that, you know, if you haven't seen Shabd, I would strongly recommend you watch Shabd. Of course, it has, you know, it's a Hindi movie, so there's obviously it's not perfect. It's not in the range of what they say Johnny Gaddar is. But I feel that it was criminally underappreciated. It was a far, far better movie than it was made out to be. And most people didn't even understand what the movie was about.
Interesting. Yes.
All right. So that was a very, very interesting discussion. And it was a decade that we normally don't talk about, but it's, I think, a decade that now is a time for nostalgia. And maybe there are some, now there might be like some, you know, web series which are 2000s themed as opposed to 90s. And that we can perhaps plumb some of the tropes of the decade. I'm very interested in these things. And my interest for these things started from, there used to be a show that, I don't know if they show it in India, but it's called I Love the 80s, I Love the 90s. It was on VH1.
Yes.
And have you, any of you guys heard of this show?
I've heard of it. I've not watched it.
So it's like a, you know, multiple episode show where every episode they take some, you know, some cultural artifact of the decade, like Tamagotchi, for instance. And they'll have like four or five comedians and they'll ask them like, you know, what are your experiences? What do you have to say? It's really hilarious and educative. You look at all the small things, like let's say He-Man figures or something. They'll say, I had this He-Man figure or something. And I mean, in a way, this inspiration for May I Have Your Attention, Please, was that, you know, seeing that I felt that in India, we have such a rich cultural memory of these decades, but we don't have anything that captures it. And, you know, this is such a very important part of what our lived history is. I mean, it's not, you know, Akbar, you know, Akbar and Himu and Humayun. It's also the history that we lived. So important that we capture it somehow. So talking to you, Diptogirti, and hope to have you back hopefully sooner than a year, because I can't believe that it's almost been a year that you have been on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Always enjoy these conversations. So anytime.
All right. And thanks, everybody.
And that was our podcast for today. I do hope you had as much fun listening to it as we had in making this one. And if you really like this one, you might want to re-listen to episode 72. That's the one which Arnab was just talking about from last December, where Arnab and Diptogirti, they looked at what else but 90s movies. So do check it out or recheck it out if you have always listened. And you can also now post your comments and discuss the episode right on the Foursquare.net site. So just click on the detailed show notes link for the detailed show notes for discussions, links to books by Arnab and Diptogirti, and lot more. For example, Arnab, I'll want the link to the Mishti Doi song that you mentioned. We'll put it up in the show notes. So anyway, I guess that's all for today. So until next time, take care. Bye-bye.